Good morning and welcome to Cosmic Influence. My name is Walter Cruttenden and I'm here with co-host Jeff Pitino.
How are you this morning?
And as usual, we are here to talk about the higher ages, which really means higher consciousness. And today's subject is one that has been getting more and more press lately, and one that is that frankly we were a little bit skeptical about, but the more we read about it, the more impressed we are with the degree of research that has gone into it. And it is on the topic of orbs. Specifically, we're talking today with the co-authors of the Orb Project. And Jeff will introduce our guests today.
Our guests today are Dr. Michal Ledwith and Dr. Klaus Heinemann. And Dr. Ledwith was a professor of systematic theology for 16 years at Maynooth College in Ireland, and subsequently the university's president for 10 years. He's served as a member of the International Theological Commission and as chairman of the Committee of the Heads of the Irish Universities. And he was also recently featured on the movie What the Bleep Do We Know? And Dr. Klaus Heinemann was born and educated in Germany. He holds a doctorate in experimental physics and is also a Reiki master and spirit-directed healer. He's worked for many years in materials science research at NASA UCLA and as a research professor at Stanford University.
And lest some of our listeners think that orbs are simply smudges on the camera lens or a pickup of dust or water vapor, I must say that their book has a foreword by William A. Tiller. Dr. Tiller was a professor of material sciences at Stanford and now serves as professor emeritus of Stanford, or chairman emeritus of Stanford. And so I must say I'm very impressed with the amount of credentials that surround this project and the science has gone into it. So with that, gentlemen, Michal, are you there? Klaus, you there?
Yeah, I'm indeed, Walter.
Terrific. Great to have you on the show.
Good to be here with you.
Yeah, thank you.
So perhaps you could start just by giving a brief bit of background about how you got interested in the subject of orbs to begin with.
Well, would you like me to lead off, Klaus?
Sure, why don't you lead off?
Okay, thank you. Walter, I've been taking pictures of orbs for probably six to seven years, I think, at this point, and have a collection of over 150,000 images. I had never heard of orbs until a set of teachings from around the School of Ancient Wisdom talked about them extensively at that time. And I started investigating what these were. And I was interested in trying to discover exactly what they were and in what circumstances they could best be photographed. And I think if I could put it this way, my main discovery, the most important discovery I made, was that the orbs are not seen by reflected light like, say, people and cats and dogs and houses in photographs are. You take a flash picture and the flash light is reflected back into the camera and it's captured on film or a digital receiving plate. I discovered that the light from the orbs was coming back slightly later than the light from the other objects in the picture. And I postulated myself, drawing on my old training in physics, that it might be what they call in physics fluorescence, which is that the light from the flash of the camera strikes the orbs, the photons of light become electrons, they spin the electrons of the orb up to a higher level, and then the orb shrinks back once the stimulus of light is gone, and it spits out the surplus electrons, and these become photons and are reflected back. So that immediately gave me a clue to what orbs are. If they are physical in some sense, even though obviously it's a very different kind of physical to what we're used to normally, then they're not in the class of, you know, what we heard from the seances and so forth in Edwardian and Victorian times, sort of ectoplasm. They are physical in a higher form than we are. Also, of course, we immediately know from being able to detect them with a digital camera rather than film camera. The digital camera is much more sensitive to the detection of orbs, And that means that they're coming through the infrared band because a digital camera is sensitive to that band of light just below visible light. So they're nothing supernatural or extraordinary or paranormal in that sense. They're just some things that we cannot see.
Well, let's get into exactly what they are then when we return from our break. You're listening to Cosmic Influence. Welcome back to Cosmic Influence. Today we're talking about orbs with Michal Ledwith and Klaus Heinemann. And I'm sure many of you or many people have just said to you that, hey, this is nothing but a reflection from water vapor or dust or something like that. How do you respond to that?
Well, let me respond to this question, but just simply by pointing out that the evidence is just absolutely overwhelming. Michal just mentioned that he has about 150,000 photographs with orbs in his computer, and that is an awful lot. And, you know, even if there are a few of those that are indeed reflections of droplets or other airborne particles, the overwhelming majority is not. And I had a similar, the way I ran into orbs was actually quite different. I saw them for the first time at a spiritual seminar, and they were extremely bright, and they were white, and they were just simply stunning to me. That was about 3 years ago when I first saw them, and I actually, when I had uploaded that into my computer, I went down to the ballroom and looked very carefully to see whether there was anything that could explain this strange phenomenon that I was seeing, and there was absolutely nothing. And then I looked at all these normal, quote-unquote, explanations like airborne particles and so on, and simply had to exclude all of them. And, for example, if you see an orb behind... And on all of these explanations hinge upon the fact that these particles would be very close to the camera, within about a couple of inches. And if you see an orb, on the other hand, which I've seen a number of times, that is eclipsed by an object, let's say by the head of a person or by some other object that is far away from the camera, that in and by itself excludes all these explanations. So there is no real explanation as to how this all came about.
Okay.
Michal has explained one possibility, and this may not be the only explanation. There may be others. The one thing that I am fairly certain about is that they are really not directly explainable with normal, standard, classical physics.
What are some of the other explanations that have been postulated?
It is very hard to explain to explain this, and I actually want to refrain from that. But they are definitely energetic in the term that the energy is probably derived from the flash, but how it is converted by the orbs in such a way that they get reflected back to the camera is not very clearly known. And the evidence is that they do reflect in the infrared range. They like to do that, but not all of them do. There are some that are clearly in the regular visible range, visible spectral range.
I saw that William Tiller had written this fairly lengthy foreword a bit about the physics. Can you sort of summarize his thoughts as to what this phenomena is?
I think he comes to the conclusion that they are not of this physical reality. That is the upshot of it. And that, but they do have an association with the mind, with our mind, in some way. And we still have to do a lot more research before we can really get a grasp of that. Bill is a very highly qualified person to do that.
So in association with our mind, so it's somehow observer-dependent to some degree?
It may very well be. It may very well be. The evidence that we have is that we can, with our minds, address the orbs. We can literally ask them to show up. We can command them. We can suggest that they show up in our pictures, and if they want to, they do that. They show up in certain places, in places that are, in a way, way beyond the statistical analysis, unique to a particular picture. For example, if they would be at a healer's hand, they would be at the mouth of a singer, they would be at in just places that literally announce, yes, I'm here and I want to make a statement. We don't know what that statement is, but that appears to me the case.
Right. Your book seemed fairly clear on that point, the book and the film, that you can increase the number of orbs by asking for them or setting up a spiritual environment where they seem to be more likely to show up versus just random photos where they're less likely to show up.
I think that the likelihood of that to occur increased by a factor of about 100 in my case.
Okay.
Now, how do you? I know in your book you show several examples of pictures where it's just dust particles, and pictures where people suggest there's actually orbs.
So one is a fake or artificial orb versus one you consider a more natural or real phenomena.
How do you tell the difference between the two, or is there an easy way to tell the difference?
Well, Michal, do you want to...
Okay, well, Jeff and Walter, I have many, many series of pictures that were taken 10 seconds apart, and that's the 10 seconds is the period that it takes my camera to recycle in order to be able to flash again. And in the first picture of the series, there's no orbs or maybe one or two orbs. And in the next picture, 10 seconds later, the sky is literally filled with hundreds, if not thousands, of orbs. And 10 seconds later, there's nothing at all again in the sky. So obviously, to my mind, whatever the reasons for that may be, it certainly cannot be due to any of the conventional suggestions that were advanced in the past that it's due to pollen particles in the air or dust particles or water droplets. Because as Klaus pointed out earlier, you know, if you can't have a raindrop, say, within 2 or 3 inches of the lens of the camera, you're not going to pick it up very well, if mm-hmm. at all. So basically, there's so much evidence to the contrary, I really don't spend much time wondering about whether they're real or not, because you cannot clear the air of pollen particles or dust particles or whatever, you know, within 10 seconds.
Let me add to that the actual evidence in two consecutive images that of the very same orb being shown at a slightly different location, at a slightly different rotation, and a different size. And this you cannot get that with a dust particle. That won't hang around that long. Just impossible.
Yes. Yeah, I agree totally.
Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense. I'm curious on the human aspect of this. Michal, when you first got interested in, and you told your associates at the university about this, what kind of reaction did you get there?
Well, I was already retired from being president there by the time I got involved with this, so I didn't have to address any of my colleagues with this, my academic colleagues. But I've been largely associating with people who are somewhat open to this. I mean, I've spoken about orbs in places as disparate as Australia, Japan, South America, all over Europe. And generally, I have found, and I found this especially at the formal launch of our book in New York, several people came up to me and said at the end, you know, this gives me so much hope and such a different view of reality than I had before. Thank you so much for doing this. I'm bringing out my own orb DVD in 3 or 4 weeks' time. It's called Orbs, Clues to a More Exciting Universe. And the reason I chose that kind of title was because I feel many of the fundamental categories that we've used so blithely in the past, like what does spirit mean, what does paranormal mean, the supernatural, you know, what am I, what happens to me before birth, or what happens after death. All of these areas in which I was, I suppose, and still am an expert in conventional terms of Western Christianity, have to be redefined very radically. And I think the redefinition is not going to be any form of a loss, but a gain.
I understand. Were you originally a Catholic priest then?
Yes, yes.
I see.
I see myself still as that.
Okay. Well,
others don't.
I think the traditional view of a Catholic priest is a bit more conservative, but it actually gives me hope just knowing that that you are interested in, you know, sort of the broader scope of life.
Well, and thank you. Yes, I think unless we are open to evidence, you know, obviously our perspective in terms of how we understand the universe in which we live and how it functions, it has remarkably changed. You know, especially since the time of Copernicus, who only quoted that second century Greek philosopher, second century BC, with whose work he was familiar. But our understanding has changed, and unfortunately, the religious understanding of the universe hasn't changed. And while science seems to function, you know, by Kuhn's old hypothesis of conjectures and refutations, you make a conjecture, then you try to refute it, and that narrows your focus. Religion seems to batten up the hatches once there's any new information coming in, and it's always seen as a threat. Now, I think that is an absolutely fatal path for religion to go down.
That's sort of the traditional religious view, although here in California we're seeing more and more untraditional religious practices, spiritual practices, I suppose, and more people we run into seem to be open to these things.
Yeah, it tends to we get the full spectrum of spiritual beliefs down here in California.
Right, but we're interested in the science side of it as much as possible, even though these things are often difficult to explain.
Well, I think, Walter, that both Klaus and I don't really think there is that great a disparity between religion and science, that they are simply two different ways of understanding reality that come from two different epochs in human history.
I agree with that 100%.
Well put. Yeah.
We have to take another break really quick, but we'll be right back. You're listening to The Cosmic Influence. I'm Jeff Pitino with our host Walter Crutenden, and we'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Cosmic Influence. I'm Jeff Pitino with our host, Walter Crutenden, and today we are talking about orbs. So I'd like to get right back into it. Either Klaus or Michal, one of my questions is, are orbs a fairly new phenomena as far as being photographed, or how long have they been around, and is our knowledge of them just increasing, or our awareness of them?
Well, I think the answer to that, Jeff, is that when digital cameras came in, 10, 15 years ago, people began to see these phenomena in their pictures. And the reason why they're more capturable by digital camera is because a digital camera is sensitive to a small band of infrared just outside of visible light. So those orbs are below visible light. But as Klaus mentioned earlier, the more beautiful orbs and the more spectacular ones are not in infrared at all. I think they're in the ultraviolet spectrum and beyond that, which is higher than visible light rather than lower. But the reason why people are capturing more orbs is because of the prevalence now of digital cameras.
So they weren't able to be captured on film.
No, they were.
But more rarely. Their frequency would have to be much more close to visible light to be captured on film. But we have depictions of what both Klaus and I believe to be orbs, you know, in medieval paintings all over the place. Even I remember J.Z. Knight suggested to me one time that the putti, you know, those little winged heads you see in medieval art, that they might have been because people see orbs or saw orbs. And obviously, to keep them upright without any visible means of support, they put wings on them.
Interesting.
If we assume, which I do, at least as a working hypothesis, that these are emanations from beings that are very conscious and highly evolved, then we can understand that if they actually want to be seen, then they now found a method through our digital cameras.
Yes,
which wasn't there before.
Exactly.
And let me divert a little bit from what we're talking about here and go back to a phenomenon that has been observed actually by Catholics in the town of Medjugorje in Yugoslavia about 20 years ago. And these were apparitions that were seen, that were experienced by young people. Apparitions of, in that case, of the Holy Mother speaking to them, conveying messages to them over a period of several years, every day. And these apparitions were seen by about 40 children, and they had they became such so important that they did tremendous scientific studies on these children and found out without any question that they were for real, that they were not hallucinations or anything like that. Now, in this case, we are seeing something that is becoming available to everybody who has a digital camera, and not just to a handful of people who have capabilities that are outside of normal capabilities. So I think what we're witnessing here is a phenomenon whereby the the world of spirits, the spirit world, wants to communicate to us that they are for real, that there is more to life than we know, than we generally accept in our physical reality.
And when you say spirit world, that's a broad term for
very broad term.
Dimension we just may not understand at this point.
I'm just simply talking about another dimension. Yes.
Right. Speaking of the norm, I noticed that there's beautiful pictures in your book, once again called The Orb Project. And most of the pictures I have seen are, you know, the spherical orbs. And in the book, you have many different shapes here, and some where they're off. They're sometimes even creating a vortex. Any idea what that's about?
Well, those are my pictures, and I don't think they have been recorded anywhere else, as far as I'm aware. I think, you know, drawing on what Klaus said earlier, it's certainly my view that constant focus maintained over a long period of time seems to be essential to getting any extraordinary orb pictures. I mean, anyone can go out any day with a cheap camera and get orb pictures of the regular spherical ones, but it was after about 2 years of daily photography of orbs that these vortices began to appear, and they were spinning. They were spinning at least, you know, from my vantage point of view, anti-clockwise. And I think that what allowed them to appear was constant and sustained focus on them over a long period of time. But if you're asking me, what do I think this vortex is? I think it is basically the wormhole between dimensions opening up. And I was fortunate enough, after some suggestions from Ramtha, that I looked up the work of some Russian physicists, particularly Professor Leonid Kosirev, in the Soviet era in the early 1950s or late 1940s, which had an extraordinary amount of information on what he called the torsion vortex or the torsion field, which from a layman's point of view basically is a field that works counter to gravity. And it also seems to be, according to some physicists, the thing that affects time. So time hangs on a torsion field. So basically, if the torsion field is able to be accelerated sufficiently, it will overcome the effects of the gravitational field. And I believe that that is how people become weightless and how the phenomena such as levitation and so forth occur. These have nothing to do with sanctity. You know, you can be canonized in some religions for levitation after some examination. The catch is you've got to die first, of course. But these, I think, are natural phenomena. They're just a higher form of physics, as Klaus said earlier, than we're accustomed to. So what I see in those vortex pictures that I took, I think it's basically a torsion vortex, and that we have discovered from the study of orbs, I think, that reality is separated one level from another by frequency. If that is so, then we can control the reality that we experience by changing frequency. And the transition from one level to another is through a vortex of that kind. That's what I believe is involved there.
Well, if life does move on different frequencies, we need to explore the commercial frequency. You're listening to Cosmic Influence. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Cosmic Influence. Today we're talking with Drs. Michal Ledwith and Dr. Klaus Heinemann. Do you guys have a website for your book, The Orb Project, or where can people find it if they're interested?
Well, we do have a website. I have a website of my own, and Klaus has a website of his own. I get pictures every day from people, and very glad if anyone wants to send in any pictures and ask, you know, what's happening here, or what's this or that. My website is a strange name, hamburgeruniverse.com. It comes from the fact that years ago I was drawing the mindset on a board that I think keeps us all trapped religiously, which is the earth in the middle like a flat patty of meat. And I drew the vault of the heavens above, where God and the angels and the saints are abide, and another vault below for the underworld where Satan and his minions live. I said, my goodness, this looks like a hamburger. So I called my website www.hamburgeruniverse.com, and if anyone wants to ask any questions, they can reach me there. Klaus is an expert on our joint website for the Orb Project book, so I'll let him expound on that if you would.
Michal, do you know the extra website?
It's www.theorbproject.com.
Okay, great.
And there is another one that I would mention here, www.orbs.wikispaces.com.
Okay.
And that is dedicated more to the research aspect, to the experimental aspect of orbs.
Great. Okay, great. Thank you.
Great. By the way, looking at your pictures here, it looks like you two guys could just about be brothers. I'm curious where you met originally.
Well, you know, Klaus has had a much easier life than I have.
Well, I was, of course, born in Germany, as I cannot hide. But I've lived in the United States for a long time.
Okay. And I noticed you did quite a bit of work for NASA. It says in computational fluid dynamics, materials development. And
right, right.
So once again, for anybody just tuning in that thinks orbs might just be a reflection of a dust particle or water vapor, I really invite you to look closer at their book, The Orb Project. And what's neat about your research also is, I think, you know, you're not saying that orbs are this or orbs are that, that you're admitting it's an unexplained phenomena, and it's just something that we should be looking into.
Yes, we're only in our infancy yet in looking at any of these things. But I am certainly of the view, I think Klaus has adumbrated that as well this morning, that just as, say, television 75 years ago was a very, very primitive thing indeed, and look where it is now, I think that when the amateurs are taken over by the experts, I mean, we're amateurs, and we have certainly very carefully stated in the book that we are at the beginning of this, what we certainly believe is a marvelously exciting stage in human history. But when more sophisticated equipment becomes available and, you know, the experts come in, I think we may see an evolution in this whereby communication with these entities on a regular basis will become quite common. And what happened when the new world opened up with Columbus, etc.? Maybe, you know, what's about to happen with this might exceed all our expectations. It would certainly blow the narrow mindsets that so many people live with today out of the water.
Yeah, that would definitely be interesting. Are there times of the year that orbs tend to be more active in your experience, or are they fairly constant?
Well, I don't know if you want me to do this. I have found I photograph orbs practically every day, and I haven't found any great variation in the times or circumstances that they appear. There are a number of factors. If the humidity of the air is high, I think it helps electrical conductivity. Also, I think if the circumstances are cold, if it's a low temperature, it tends to help. But as Klaus said earlier, it's blatantly clear to me that the orbs, you know, can decide to show themselves or not. And the atmospheric or climatic conditions really don't affect that.
We had one author on this show sometime earlier, and he's been a regular speaker at our conferences on precession and ancient knowledge. His name is John Burke. He wrote a book called Seed of Knowledge, Stone of Plenty. And he has done experiments at over 80 ancient sites like Avebury, Stonehenge, pyramids, etc. And he has taken a lot of photographs, and he's not into orbs at all, but he finds he gets a lot of them in his pictures in the very early morning when he's at these spiritual sites, and he thinks it's somehow related to the solar wind interacting with the electromagnetic envelope of the Earth as dawn is occurring, but it's just a guess.
Well, I think both Klaus and I have shown pretty well that there's much more to it than just some passive physical phenomenon, that there is an activity there. That's why we haven't hesitated to use terms like conscious about these things we're picking up in the pictures. So I think to explain them as some super version of the dust and pollen in the air theory, I still think it doesn't explain away, you know, the richness of the reality that we've uncovered so far.
And then, of course, you see them inside, you see them outside, and at least those that are inside, definitely, I have not seen any dependence on the time of the year or time of the day or anything like that. There are far overriding issues, I believe, in them showing up in our cameras, in our pictures.
Good. Well, I think it's admirable that you're doing this research in this rather skeptical age we are still in here. But if we don't ask the questions, we'll never find out.
That is true. And it's interesting to look at the multitude of contributions that we get from people out there who have read the book and who are writing us and telling us their stories and their experiences.
Oh, I'd like to hear a little bit more about that, but we need to take a short break. You're listening to Cosmic Influence. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Cosmic Influence. Today we're talking about The Orb Project, a new book by Michal Ledwith and Klaus Heinemann. And Klaus, you were mentioning that you're receiving emails and communications from others that are also photographing orbs. Can you tell us a little bit about what others are hearing, saying to you?
Well, it's a very wide spectrum, but there are people who are literally, apparently, able to talk to the orbs. We discussed this here, and I don't know whether it's true. I cannot, but it certainly is no longer my habit to just flatly deny everything that I hear from other people. I have come much more to an attitude of taking at least some of that as true, and just simply wondering and looking at it from a new perspective. There are people who see different kinds of orbs. We have discussed mostly the orbs that are round in shape and that have certain interior features, sometimes areas missing, and all of that. But there are people who see orbs of a somewhat different nature, as streaks, as light streaks. They photograph them or they film them with film cameras, with little film cameras. There are reports of that. There are people who see orbs in connection with, reminiscing of departed loved ones. I don't have a direct experience of that myself, but there are a lot of people writing their stories and presenting their stories in this regard, and I'm sure that Michal has some of those as well.
Oh, yes, indeed, Klaus, quite a lot of them, in fact. But there's one thing maybe I might add on, which you well know, Klaus. I discovered, Walter and Jeff, that after a certain length of time that I began to actually see the orbs with my naked eye without any camera. And the reason, I think, is not anything to do with being special or nothing to do with the paranormal or supernatural. We know that the brain filters out perhaps 90% or more of the information that comes through our eyes. And it only allows in, because it's only able to process so much, it only allows in material to do with everyday living, my safety, my security, my health, you know, taking the children to school, taking out the garbage, doing the laundry, etc. That's the sort of stuff that the brain allows in, and 90% of the information coming through the eyes is rejected by the brain. So seeing is actually not just an optical phenomenon. It's a conscious phenomenon in which the brain is highly active. Now, I think a great example that I sometimes use is that when the microscope was invented years upon years ago, the physicians looking through the microscope onto a blood sample could not see the chromosomes in there, even though they were there. It took a while before they actually saw what they were looking at. And I think what happens when you begin to see orbs with your naked eye, after a couple of years of constant photography of them, the brain starts to recognize that somehow these phenomena are of interest to you, and it stops censoring them, and you begin to see the orbs with your naked eye. And they're much more vivid in color than in the camera, because then I don't think you're seeing them anymore through the infrared spectrum.
Right. You know, I have to admit that I've seen one myself ever since I was a teenager, and I see it every few days or so, and I think I've always just assumed, oh, that's just some reflection my eye is seeing or something. But it's when I opened your book, I noticed that you classified orbs by types, and it's what you would call type H, and it's basically our purple dot. So there, I've come out of the closet, and I hope our viewers forgive me, but I'm just telling you what I've seen.
Oh, you're on your way.
Okay.
You're on your way, exactly, right.
Now, Michal, I know some of the pictures in the book as well show almost a glowing mist that later in subsequent pictures resolved into orbs. What is that, or what's...
Well, it's, I'm not exactly sure. I think it's plasmoid material, which is the fourth state of matter, or more accurately, the fourth phase of matter. Orbs can, you know, extrapolate themselves into this misty, ghostly type of phenomenon instantly, practically, and disappear back into the spherical form just as rapidly. And I think this is what gave rise to the belief in ghosts in our culture. And I'm sure one of the most popular forms of sport in the orb world must be manifesting these ghostly shapes to scare superstitious humans to bits. But that is what that is. It's a plasmoid formation, and I've discovered, I think, that the orbs in a very relaxed atmosphere or a congenial atmosphere to them seem to expand into these misty, cloudy shapes, and then contract instantly back in again. But I have some really dramatic pictures. In the book, Klaus and I, you know, we had very little space for pictures. So what we tried to do was to use representative pictures of the various stages of reality. In my own DVD that's coming out, I'll have about 500 to 600 images of my own. And you'll see a lot of that type of cloud-like formation in that selection.
Another conclusion I draw from looking at your pictures here is that orbs of a feather flock together.
Yeah.
So if there's one type, and I know there's these different types, some with lines, some with dots on them, some not spherical, they tend to all be together.
Yeah, I think myself, and I'm expanding on this in the DVD, that the orbs are not spherical, though they look like spherical. I think they're actually vortices themselves, and that what we're doing is looking into the mouth of a vortex.
Oh, interesting.
Now there's one aspect that I know we didn't mention in this conversation, and that is that I believe we have quite a bit of evidence that the normal state of being of these orbs is one of great mobility and also of great expansion and contraction. And so normally we wouldn't see them just because they changed their size and their location so quickly, like enormously fast. And they literally have to hold still if they want to be shown, showing themselves in our photographs. And so that's part of the way they function. And that's part of the reason why we don't see them normally.
Good. Well, a picture is worth 1,000 words, so for any of our listeners that are interested, I invite them to pick up the book, The Orb Project. And I want to thank you, Michal and Klaus. We're at the end of our program, but thank you very much for being on Cosmic Influence.
Welcome back to The Cosmic Influence. I'm Jeff Pitino with our host, Walter Cruttenden. It's been a fascinating show talking about orbs today.
And both Jeff and I went into this topic very skeptical, I must say, and the more we read about it, learn about it, see the amount of hard scientists that are interested in it, we think it's worthy of further study. And so we invite you all to look for their book, The Orb Project.
And if you're interested in seeing where they're going to be or learning more about them, Michal's website is www.hamburgeruniverse.com. And they have one other website as well.
Klaus, just www.orbs.wikispaces.com. So you can find more information there. We thank you again for listening to Cosmic Influence.
Bring on the higher ages.